You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Community Connection SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series, hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dr. Sylvia Hanna, and I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we will discuss the nurse's perspective and the collaboration of the multidisciplinary team in the care of patients with non-melanoma skin cancer. Joining me today is Ms. Krista Rubin, a nurse practitioner at the Center of Melanoma and Cutaneous Oncology at Massachusetts General Cancer Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome, Krista. It is so good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me here today. I'm thrilled to be with you.
It's our pleasure. Now, Krista, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been a nurse practitioner, and how long have you been at the Center for Melanoma Cutaneous Oncology?
Well, I hate to admit it, but I have been a nurse practitioner for over 20 years. And prior to that, I was an oncology nurse for 10 years. So I have 30 years experience in oncology, and about 25 of those years are dedicated to skin cancers, melanoma, and much more recently, the non-melanoma skin cancers.
And how long have you been at Massachusetts General Cancer Center?
I have been there my entire career as a nurse practitioner. So 21 years.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. Well, that is dedication. Krista, the core function of a multidisciplinary team is what we were going to discuss today. And the goal is to bring together a group of healthcare professionals from different fields in order to determine the best treatment plan for patients. As a nurse practitioner, you probably interact with most of these members. Can you describe who is on the team and how everyone collaborates?
So the team that I work with at Mass General is made up primarily of dermatology, both general dermatologists as well as Mohs surgeons, medical oncology, so myself, as well as two or three other medical oncologists who specialize in skin cancer, radiation oncology, pathologists, radiologists, and we also have ancillary team members as well, such as social work and in some cases, registered dietitians, as well as physician assistants and other nurse practitioners. We all work together in various disciplines to take care of these rather complex patients. So I feel very fortunate at Mass General to have such dedicated and subspecialists that all work together to provide the best care that we can to these patients.
And on these teams, is there a specific group that typically leads, or is it different for each patient case?
Generally, in the way our practice works, is that many of these patients are referred by dermatology, and they'll be referred to either surgery or radiation in some cases. Many of the patients are referred from within our institution specifically, and then we also have many referrals from outside centers, so more in the community. Generally, the intake team will be the head and neck surgeon and medical oncology, and they will decide when they receive the referral who best to lead seeing that patient. So, for example, if it seems as though the referral will be best suited for a surgeon, then our surgeon would meet with that patient first, go in, do a history physical, and then later in the day, we have a multidisciplinary team meeting, or tumor board, as we call it, where many of the cases will be reviewed and discussed. And if at that meeting, the decision is that it would be better suited for another specialist to take the lead from that point forward, they will. So for example, if a patient is referred in thinking that surgery would be the best option, but then during our team meeting or tumor board, the decision is that systemic therapy, such as immune therapy, would be a better choice, then the medical oncologist would then step in and be the team lead. And that may switch around as the patient proceeds through their journey, through their treatment journey. So for example, there are many patients that may start with immune therapy or other systemic therapy and then be referred back to surgery to go ahead with surgery. And then in some cases, they may need radiation. So a radiation oncologist may then step in and take the lead for a period of time. So it can be rather complex, but that's such the great thing about having a multidisciplinary team where everybody's involved, is that there's certain roles at certain times for certain specialists. And so my role is often to kind of be the liaison among all of those disciplines. And so sometimes I'm kind of the person that will see the patient regularly while they're undergoing systemic treatment. But then there may be a problem and we may need to involve another discipline. We'll talk about that during the team meeting or tumor board.
And in your role, which members of the team do you interact with most? Or is it equally, like, would you say, like, I never interact with the pathologist, or, you know, I'm often working with the social worker? Like, are there team members that you work with more often, less often?
So obviously the medical oncology attendings that I work with, we're in very close communication. And then I would say probably surgery. And third would be radiation oncologist. I rarely interact with the pathologist or the radiation oncologist unless it's there are points to be discussed during the team meeting or tumor board. So generally my interactions are among the pathologist and radiation oncologist. I'll give you an example. A recent patient I saw who had a very large non-melanoma skin cancer, specifically a squamous cell of the head and neck, and she was recommended to start with immune therapy. And she had a lot of underlying comorbidities, medical problems that made her care somewhat complex. And she wasn't really tolerating the systemic therapy as well as we would have hoped. She was having a lot of side effects, more impacting her quality of life rather than any life-threatening type side effect. But obviously that was something to be considered. And so after two cycles or two treatments, she was really questioning whether or not she could continue on therapy. And we knew that the goal for this lady was to have 3 to 4 treatments and then surgery was going to be continued. But after two cycles, she just really couldn't tolerate treatment anymore, subjectively. I thought she was doing rather well given the circumstances, but that was something that I felt needed to be discussed among the team. So during tumor board later that day, we were able to discuss the situation. I expressed my concern about her continuing. We had invited social work onto that call to help try to sort out, is this something that was, she could use some psychological support as she was struggling to go through. So my interaction that day involved the social work, the surgeon. So do we consider maybe cutting short her immunotherapy and just going right ahead with radiation? And then we also discussed whether or not there would be a role for radiation prior to surgery or after surgery. So it was a great way to have a conversation, which normally would have had to have been separate among all of those specialty providers, but we were able to do it on our virtual team meeting. Actually, we have these virtually, which makes it so much easier for folks to be able to participate in that. So it's just a great way to have all the people that really need to be involved in one place and all hearing what the other providers are saying. And it just makes, I think it provides a better quality of care because it's so much easier to have a conversation in person or virtually than via an email or reading a report. So it just makes, in my opinion, the care better for these patients.
Well, that's wonderful. You answered my question. My next question was going to be about virtual meetings. So appreciate that.
Yeah. So there's some good that came out of COVID and that we've established, much more utility of virtual meetings. And it just allows so many more disciplines to participate.
Krista, that was a great example of taking into account the patient's perspective and tolerability of therapy. Do you have instances where patient's perspective is different than the treatment goals that the multidisciplinary team is recommending?
Sure. There are a number of times that either the patient doesn't quite understand the goals of care, or perhaps their goals are different than the treating team. And my role as a nurse practitioner is to often advocate for the patient and to really make sure that the patient understands the goals of care. For example, many, many patients may not fully understand the reason that that there's a recommendation for the order in which they are to undergo their treatment. So for example, sometimes surgery is upfront, meaning that's the first treatment that the patient will receive, and then to be followed by either radiation or immune therapy. And in some other instances, that may be different. It may be immune therapy followed by radiation. And so I spend a lot of time with patients trying to ensure that they understand the goals, why things are recommended in the order that they are, and then to really listen to them and their concerns. There tends to be an older population of patients that may be less tech savvy, so less likely to be doing research on the internet. Not everybody, but many, many patients. And so I really need to understand how and why they are feeling different about the recommendation than maybe originally understood by the physician team. And so many times I'll need to advocate for that patient or discuss the patient's concerns in the team meeting, and then In some cases, I'll bring that back to the patient. Other times, the physician will then either arrange an appointment or a phone call with the patient and caregiver to make sure that the patients are understanding that. And so I do find that much of what I do is trying to get a better sense of what the patient understands. And that's really important, because there's, for many of these very complex cases, there's no standard approach. And so much of it is based on physician experience. Much of it comes from the multidisciplinary approach. And when I tell patients and say to them, this recommendation was made by the tumor board or by the board, actually patients feel better about the decision, because they'll say, oh, so all of the doctors were in one room or one virtual room and they all agree. And when they can understand that better and realize that there is very intense communication among the providers, they're much more likely to agree to the intended plan. And so that's important, is to make sure that these patients really do understand the plan. And so being able to tell a patient, yes, the tumor board made this unanimous decision or made the recommendation, then they're more likely to proceed with the intended plan.
And as with getting any group of people together, I assume that there may be times where there is not consensus on how to move forward. Typically, how are differing opinions on a multidisciplinary team regarding management resolved?
So in my experience, I have to say that that doesn't come up often. As a general rule, the decisions for treatment are really evidence-based, and each one of the specialty providers will certainly provide their opinion. And there may be some discrepancy about order of proceeding with treatment or where sometimes an individual is to get treatment, whether that be in the community closer to home or at the academic medical center where I am. But very rarely is there disagreement. There often is a contingency plan. So it may, perhaps the surgeon feels surgery should be first, where the medical oncologist may say, I think we're better off starting with systemic therapy to perhaps shrink the tumor. So there may be some disagreements there, but as a general rule, there is a decision to, all right, let's try with two cycles of immunotherapy or systemic therapy, reevaluate with either some restaging CAT scans or other imaging, and then make a decision about surgery. So at least in my experience, disagreements are relatively rare, and more likely what we're to see are contingency plans, plan A, plan B, plan C. And the patient's preference also has to weigh in on that. I mean, for many people, they travel far distances, and to come in for daily radiation, for example, may not be feasible. They may not have rides or just may not have the ability to get in. And so that may factor into a decision for another treatment option.
Well, that's wonderful that the patient perspective is obviously an important part of the management plan. Krista, it was wonderful chatting with you today. Thank you so much. We learned a lot about the multidisciplinary team and their approach.
I appreciate you having me here today.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.